The chairperson of the audit committee of the audit general, colleagues, we meet here today under normal circumstances in relation to our physical nature of holding these meetings. After a long time, we have been on virtual, and we hope that such interaction is going to somewhat assist us in terms of looking into the matters in front of us. In welcoming the Office of the Auditor General and the committee that handles matters of the audit in the entirety of ensuring compliance and neatness, I wish to then welcome the chairperson of the audit committee. Colleagues, as you would know, in terms of the agenda in front of us, it's a day where we meet to receive a briefing from the Office of the Auditor General after we had the initial a brief a note on what has occurred in the past a few months. We appreciated the fact that the AG took it upon herself and the DAG to raise the matters that affect the office with us without any coercive instance. We appreciated when they did so, when we had our workshop in Pretoria at their head office. It's unusual, but as we took it at the time, it really ought to be appreciated, because it is in the nature of the office itself to uphold the ethical standards and areas of good governance. Today, we are going to be exposed into the finality of the report which they promised us on the day, and probably the areas that they have to adopt going forward, as informed by that independent report that they promised when they gave us that briefing. The meeting that we have is taking the nature of receiving that a kind of a briefing. I read the documentation that they have forwarded to us, and I really, in appreciation, took time to get into the detail of such reports. It's really in a limited sense that you would find institutions who would forward reports of that nature without being asked to do so. Something which I think we learn as going forward, that true repute of the standing of the Office of the Auditor General, such instances ought to be encouraged. Overall, they stand above even in such a manner of transparency, and modelled around the standing of the office in terms of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa. So upfront, that's something one has noted. And then the matters which are of a detail in the context would be dealt with in terms of the reporting, going into the detail of such. So in appreciation, we really seek to say that
recording in progress.
your standing has been confirmed through such occurrences. I'm excited to that you exhibit that level of adherence to good governance and the ethical conduct. We stand to welcome all those present and those who will be or are joining us through Zoom in this meeting, and those who have apologized is Honorable Mlenzana with bereavement, and Mr. Peter Paul has as well indicated his presence, balance, absence. He is on his way out. He has just been with excitement received scholarship to study abroad, and as you would know that the studies actually would have to be registered and start between the month of September, October. So he is finalizing his presence in the employ of Parliament, and he is going to focus on improving his capacity abroad on the studies that of choice in terms of his own growth. We tend to congratulate him for such. He's still young, has got a lot of opportunity, and we know that such opportunities at their entry require a strength in terms of education. So we wish him all the best, and indeed he would get back into the country and plow his own expertise in the relevance of his studies. I hope that, let me just have that indication in appreciation of his work having been with us, and I hope we'll learn more in that area. All the best. In the agenda has been sent to us, as I've said, that the nature of the meeting is assuming a briefing, which if we have read the actual legal investigative report which the Office of the Auditor General has referred to us, and if you have read the Public Audit Act, you would find out that the matters generally are matters which are within the realm of the office itself, and us as our role to ensure and guarantee the independence of the office, and to strengthen that office and to protect that office, we have to receive these kinds of reports through engagements, and determine through oversight whether the office is still on track or not, and work together to frame a better way forward in dealing with matters which are confronting the office. And we felt that the sensitivity of such areas would require us to meet this way, so that we can have direct engagement, which we do appreciate that the office should make this trip and be with us here in Parliament. We are going to briefly as per the agenda. If there are any other things, colleagues, if you would want to raise on the adoption of the agenda, and then we give over to the Auditor General. After that, the DAG, and after the DAG, will give over to the chairperson of the Audit Committee. And then we'll have then our deliberations thereafter. If that is the case, can we continue?
Morning, Chair. Morning, AG.
Honorable Mutafa.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. No, I think the agenda is fine. As such, I'll propose that we adopt it as presented. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable Flanagan.
Thank you, Chair. I second that.
Thank you so much. AG.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning to the Honorable Members and to yourself, Honorable Chair. I'd like to greet those that are present physically and those that are on the virtual platform. Thank you very much for this opportunity to update you on the developments following my briefing to you the last time we met physically in this way. In the engagement last month, I committed that in the interest of transparency and accountability, we will present the outcome of the investigation or legal review that we had instituted as part of dealing with what was an internal matter. Honorable members, I come before you today because I believe that to restore and defend our democracy and public institutions, we need to promote accountability by adhering to and respecting due process and transparency. As a Chapter 9 institution, we have a duty to serve the people of South Africa and to do so with integrity and accountability. And this meeting is underpinned by that. We are all ultimately accountable to the values and the spirit of the Constitution. As you may recall, I did recount to you when we met that a few months ago, a member of my executive team, the Chief People Officer, asked for a meeting, which I granted. We met in my private boardroom, which is adjacent to my private office. And this was late in the afternoon of Monday, 27th of June, 2022. He indicated that he felt aggrieved by how I had expressed myself when holding him accountable for his performance. And he wanted to understand how we had got there. I offered my apology for hurting his feelings, as that was certainly not my intention. I asserted my view that his performance and that of his team must urgently improve. And I reminded him of previous conversations in which I had raised performance issues with him. In that same meeting, he announced that because I had hurt him, he could also hurt me. At this point, he produced a piece of paper in which he accused me of unprofessional, unethical, and corrupt conduct. This piece of paper set out 9 bullet points of decisions dating back from 2014 up to 2021. Now, this period covers my tenure as Deputy AG and includes the initial period of my tenure as the Auditor General. Mr. Mabaso, who was the CPO, reiterated multiple times in this meeting that in his view, these transactions and decisions that I had taken were corrupt, unethical, and unprofessional. And he asserted that if they were to be made public, that would hurt my reputation. He requested that we agree on a separation with a financial settlement so that he could leave the institution. My immediate response was that I would not entertain any discussion on a financial settlement. I said to him that he should do his job in accordance with his employment contract and that if he no longer wanted this job, he should resign. In that moment, I was very clear that I would not be intimidated. I would not be threatened, and I would not be blackmailed from holding an executive accountable for performing on his duties. This is not how we do things. There are standard procedures through which staff or the public can raise any good faith concerns about my decision-making or any concerns regarding the office that I lead. As an audit office, we take threats and intimidation very seriously, as the honorable members know, irrespective of who is making them or their level of seniority. In this instance, I took the threat to hurt me seriously. More importantly, I took these allegations seriously, especially given the nature of the role that I hold as the Auditor General. Given the nature of these allegations that were raised and the manner in which they reached me, I immediately reported the incident to the Deputy Auditor General as the head of administration, the accounting officer for the institution. And I asked him, in his capacity as the accounting officer, to institute independent processes to look at both the accusations made against me and the conduct of the CPO. Even though, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, these matters relate to operational issues within the ambit of the DAG's responsibility and authority, I was clear that the responsible thing for me to do was to proactively bring these matters to your attention as the members of SCOAG. I was also proactive in briefing the internal executive team, as well as our established governance structures, specifically the Independent Audit Committee and the Remuneration Committee. I understand the importance of my role to safeguard and support our democracy. Therefore, I cannot have such allegations being made against the Auditor General and leave them without being examined, investigated, and brought to a conclusion. I also appreciate that my role is to hold public officials accountable, and as such, I must equally expect to be held to the very same standards or even better. Furthermore, I'm clear that I cannot allow myself to be intimidated or threatened from doing my job, be it as the auditor of the public sector or as the leader of the AGSA as an institution. It is against this background that I took the proactive step to have these allegations subjected to a swift and independent review. I need to be clear. As the Honourable Chairperson has said in his introduction, we have been extremely transparent with our staff and with our oversight bodies about this matter right from the very beginning. In my view, no one should be above the rules. Every institution receives complaints and accusations from time to time, but we must use the rules to deal with such matters, learn from the experiences that arise when we have matters such as these raised, and continually seek to improve and strengthen institutions. As we said in the announcement we made public as the AGSA just 2 weeks ago, we said that in order to strengthen the systems of integrity, transparency, accountability, and performance in public institutions, we must hold ourselves as the AGSA to the same standards, or better yet, we must lead by example. And I believe that I led by example in demonstrating that no one is above the rules. Honourable Members, in each of these decisions that are the subject of these allegations and the subsequent legal review, I confirm that in exercising my authority, I applied my mind, I consulted as necessary, I carefully considered my responsibilities to build and to sustain the capability that the office required in that moment, but also as far as I could see into the foreseeable future. I'd now like to hand over to the Deputy AG. He will present the details of the independent legal review on the allegations leveled against me. And after his presentation, the Chairman of the Audit Committee will deliver a report of the Independent Audit Committee of the AGSA, which is a key part of the existing governance arrangements for the AGSA. And their role is set out, as you know, in Section 40 of the Public Audit Act. DAG?
Okay. Good morning, DAG.
Thank you, Eugene, and good morning, Honourable Chair, good morning, Honourable Members, and good morning to my Audit Committee Chair, ladies and gentlemen. It's a pleasure and a privilege, Chair, for me to come and give you an update since the last time that we met. Just to ensure that we're all on the same page, I will recap on some of the brief background to this matter, so I can then take the committee through the detailed report. The report was shared with the members, and I do hope that you have had a chance to browse through. I do appreciate that it's a fairly lengthy report. I will highlight some of the aspects that are coming out of that. As AG have mentioned, on the 27th of June, we had a meeting with the CPO, Mr. Lou Mabas. That meeting was, I was the catalyst for that meeting. He had asked me.
You're a bit softer. Just to make
it. Okay. That meeting, Chair, I was the catalyst that enabled that meeting to happen. In my one-on-one with Mr. Mabasa, he has informed me that he's trying to get a meeting with the AG, and I asked her to clear his diary for that meeting. The way that things happened are unfortunate. It would have been better to have resolved the things in a different manner. what I'm going to present to you is the event that since happened from the 27th of June. After the meeting, AG called me and informed me about the outcome of that particular meeting, which, as I mentioned, I asked her to grant Mr. Mabaso that particular meeting. She informed me about the allegations that were made against her, the 9 particular ones, which I'm going to take the committee through the legal opinion as to the legality of those particular transactions. She asked me to undertake a special investigation to assess it. Her exact words to me was, I need to know if I've erred so we can take the appropriate action. She made it clear that if there's anything that she have made or done wrong, she would like us to correct it. She gave me the freedom to go ahead and commission an independent investigation that was undertaken on my behalf by Bowman's, a law firm, independent law firm. So I'm at a stage, Chair, since last time we met, it was still a briefing, but at this stage, I do have the final report, which I've issued to you. There are still other linked processes that are happening, which I'll update the committee about. So, Chair, when you look into the allegations, I think a fundamental issue which I want to address before I go to the detailed presentation is, and if a senior executive of my team does not understand the importance of having an auditor general that is independent for the benefit of everyone in the room, but also other people who may not understand this, I want to spend some time just talking to the expectation that we have as an office and our responsibility, and also that of SCOWEC as our oversight body. I will only make this one reference to the report, and then I'll take you through the presentation that we have shared with you. So if you go to the detailed report, those who have got it in front of you, on para 79 of the report, the legal opinion was clear in terms of categorizing the aspect where SCOWEC needs, where we need prior approval of SCOWEC, and in areas that we need to consult with you, and in areas where we need to report to you. It's in the detailed report that we have shared with you, and it's on page 27 of that. There's no need to go to it. I'll summarize it. You can go back and look into it. I'm just saying this because I think, Chair, you properly captured this in your opening remarks. But if my senior executive member does not understand this, I think a lot of our other people may not appreciate it. So I need to just recap on that. Because most of the transactions that were mentioned, it was that AG, when she was DAG, did not consult with you. So I think it's important to just get that principle right. So on that particular paragraph, Chair, paragraph 79, the legal opinion clearly established the SCOWEC powers and rights, and also the duties of AGSA in respect of SCOWEC under the Public Auditors Act. Specifically, Chair, you will recall that whenever we need to retain any surplus after our year-end process, we come to you for approval. Mm. So that's where we need your prior approval. Mm. In some instances, we need to consult with you. Mm. In the report, there are specific areas which are mentioned. The area that we need to consult with you is with the issuing of our code of conduct. Secondly, is with the audit standard. Thirdly, is with the fees that we charge, the basis of the fees that we charge. And also, prior to the appointment of DAG, and since I'm recently appointed, I remember the process that AG Tsakani and went through last year to consult with you prior to appointing me. And lastly, if there are any changes that needs to go to the National Assembly. So those are instances that we need to consult with you. And this, Chair, it was created to allow the AG to be independent and only account to the Constitution. So I think it was important to just recap on that so that it is clear in terms of most of these allegations that most of them is saying there was no consultation, which means in order for us to do the work, we don't need to necessarily consult with you. You're an oversight body, so we need to come and account to you. In para 18, just to summarize the various aspects, it says, AGSA or the AG's duty to consult SCOWEC is therefore limited to the relevant section listed above. It should be noted that some of these provisions deal with AGSA powers after consultation with SCOWEC and not in consultation with SCOWEC. The latter will have implied that SCOWEC's approval was required, which in terms of the reference section is not the case. COEC does not have the authority to authorize operational transactions, as this will compromise its oversight role as envisaged in Section 55, Subsection 2 of the Constitution. And the opinion goes on to list additional constitutional court judgment. I wanted to emphasize this because I don't want to keep coming back to it in terms of did we have to consult with you, but just set it out as a fundamental principle of how the office of the Auditor General was created to be independent. Mm-hmm. And that is very important. To be able to conduct her work without fear and favor of favor, it's important that we maintain that. So, Chen, I would like to just take you through the presentation. I think it's a summary. If there's any area where we need to go back to the detailed report, I will make reference as such. But it is a lengthy report, and I had the benefit of engaging with my audit committee chair and the members over the past few days on this report. I had the benefit of engaging with the author of the opinion to take me through these things, and I will indicate to you the steps that we're going to take going forward. I will share with you what the opinion is as currently presented, and where there are areas for us to improve, we are going to improve on that. Chair, you will know from our previous engagement with us, and the audit committee chair will confirm that we don't assume that we are perfect, but in areas where there are things we can improve on, we do improve on that. And I know the other time we spoke to you, you had concerns about our IT control environment. I'm glad that when we come to you in November, the audit committee will give you a good story about the effort we've made to address those concerns. And in this report, Chair, there will be areas for us to improve. And as an institution that is keen to learn, we are going to improve. Adir, can move to the next slide, please. So, Chair, I've tried to summarize the issues that come to them, but I think it's important to just recap. So the summary from the report is that the Constitution requires the National Assembly to provide a mechanism to hold Chapter 9 institution to account. And SCOEC specifically is that body that is holding the Office of the Auditor General to account, and that is based on Section 55, Subsection 2B, Roman Figure 2, read jointly with the Public Auditors Act 10. Chair, I'm referring this because we need to reconfirm the fundamental rule of law that bind us and which we comply to. So in terms of the Section 2, it states that to provide for an oversight mechanism over us, your role as COEC is firstly to assist and protect the Auditor General in order to ensure the independence, impartiality, dignity, and effectiveness of the Auditor General. And secondly, to advise the National Assembly. So, Chen, the SCOEC's role in this is twofold, is to hold the AG accountable and to assist and protect us. I'd like to remind the committee about the need to ensure the independence of the AG. And the way that the structures were created was to ensure that the AG is able to conduct the work in an independent manner. Adil, next slide, please. So, Chen, just to recap on the SCOEC role around the salaries, allowance, and the benefit of the AG, which is, you will recall that there were amendments that happened. So there was a dispensation prior to 1st of April 2019 before the amendments came into place. And Section 7 of the PAA, Subsection 1, was clear that prior to the changes, SCOEC was expected to consult with the person recommended for the appointment as AG and make recommendation to the president for the determination of the conditions of employment and that person including an appropriate salary, allowance and other benefits. And the report goes into details as to what happened in this case as far as that process was concerned for late AG Marquette. Since 1st April, the AG is entitled to such salaries, allowance, and benefits as determined by the president after taking into consideration the recommendation of the Independent Commission and approved by the National Assembly. The Independent Commission must consult REMCO and the Minister of Finance. It's still the same section. However, there was an amendment to the PAA at the time that were given the additional powers. I'm reminding the committee about this because some of the transactions that are mentioned happened in 2017 and 2018. So it will be important to recall as to what was the dispensation that was applicable at that stage. Chair, as mentioned in the opening remarks by the AG, she had raised concerns about non-performance with the CPO on a number of occasions. The one I want to emphasize here, which is something that's going to take us years to rectify, is, you know, we rely on our trainee accountants to do our audit. One particular instance that happened this year is we hired over 400 trainee accountants. Most of those people, over 50% of them, did not have CTA, which is the honors equivalent that allows you to go and write your board exam. At this stage, Ken, we are busy with our MFMA. Half of those people are not available because they are busy preparing to write their final exams. So while we are committed as an office to transform the accounting profession by giving people an opportunity that do not necessarily have it, it's also important to understand our operational requirement in making this decision. And for us to have gone ahead and appointed so many people, it's going to affect us significantly in terms of us being able to conduct our audit. I've shared with you in the past that it's even worse from a financial perspective because MFMA, most of our auditees are not in a position to pay us. So if we don't have our people, we are forced to go and use the CWC firms, the private firms. And if we don't get paid by the auditees, we have to use our other reserves to pay these audit firms. So it was a fundamental concern. It was a concern because AG, when she was DAG with her EXCO, they had made a strategic decision that we need to get the right balance in terms of the trainees who have got CTA to respond to our operational requirement. There are other aspects, but that's one. So that particular error, Chen, while we're giving our people the best support this year, if most of them don't pass, we're going to have the same problem next year until they go through our system. Our hope as an office and the steps we have taken is to give them the best support that we can so that they can pass and they'll be available for us next year. However, the decision that should have been taken in consultation with myself and also with AG without us finding us, and we have this situation. It's just one of the examples, Chair, in terms of the concerns that have been raised. And I do agree with those concerns because it does make sense that we should have been properly consulted. So as part of the engagement that AG had with the People's Portfolio, it triggers a number of events which you have shared with us, which I've mentioned in my opening remarks that the CPO then asked for a meeting, which was granted for the 27th of June, where he presented the allegation because he felt that he's been hurt based on the her having shared her concerns. Chair, just to clarify, when she shared the concern, it was in a meeting with senior management, people who are involved in implementing the strategy of the People's Portfolio. And I was in that meeting. In that meeting, like I've mentioned, he asked for a mutual separation and indicated that if she doesn't agree, he's got the ability to hurt her. I've had the benefit of studying the report, Chair, and applying my mind in terms of these allegations. But before I give you my personal assessment of the overall thing, I want to take you through the factual legal opinion as presented. So what we have done was to ask Bowmans to conduct an investigation on the threats against the AG in terms of the legality thereof. We also ask Bowmans to conduct an investigation on the conduct of the CPO. They came back to us and they advised that to conduct the investigation without any hindrance, it's important that we suspend the CPO. So the CPO was suspended. Based on the report which they've given me for the legal matter, the disciplinary hearing is scheduled for next week. And I will allow the process to take its course, and I will not spend too much time on that part, just to update the committee on that. However, today we are at the stage where we can brief the committee regarding the outcome of the legality on the decisions that were made by the AG when she was the AG and some of them when she was AG. So the remainder of this presentation, Chair, will focus on the legality of the opinion and not deal with the disciplinary matters. Adil? So just to give context to the process that was followed in terms of this, Chair, is that the complaint or the allegation against the AG are dealt with in terms of our own complaints policy and procedures, which were last updated in June 2021. There are various categories. If there are allegations against the AG Chair, these are classified as category 4. And the procedure that is supposed to happen is if there is that particular complaint against the AG, it goes through our whistleblowing mechanism, which is managed by our risk and ethics business unit. The business unit leader will inform me in consultation with the chief risk officer about any allegation against the AG. It is my responsibility to inform you, Chair, as the chair of SCOWEC within 7 days. And then SCOWEC will then take over and take the next steps going forward. I need to emphasize, Chair, that the manner in which the CPO submitted the allegation did not follow that process. She went straight to the AG. As such, this does not fall within this particular framework that we have to do. By submitting them directly to the AG and ask for a financial settlement, it was not in the form that we anticipated. Hence, I did not treat this as allegation. Throughout the process, Chair, I kept you updated as the Chair of SCOWEC on the steps that we're taking, and I'm comfortable that we have taken the right steps given the circumstances. AG brought the allegations to me as threat, and she asked us to go and find a legal opinion or advice. That's what I have heard, and I'll take the committee on the outcome thereof. Adil, next part, please. The next part, Chair, that is a responsible organization we have to look into, which I need to advise the committee about, is whether this submission, as it was done by the CPO, is under the Protected Disclosure Act. The external legal team advised me that when the CPO provided this particular document to the AG, they have to test whether it's covered under the Protected Disclosure Act. They look into these three provisions, Chen. When you look into the disclosure being made to an employer, the disclosure must be made within the policy established by the employer. I've just outlined to the committee the policy that we use internally. This particular complaint did not follow that particular process. It was issued directly to the AG, and when I conclude, I will be able to share with the committee that I think it was used to threaten her that if she doesn't comply to the expectation, her reputation will be damaged. It must also be done in good faith with intention to investigate within mandate. And since there was an expectation for a mutual settlement, this does not meet that requirement. And lastly, it should not be made for personal gain. I believe that, and the opinion says that, these particular allegations seems to have been made with an intention of soliciting a separation with the AG, which will have resulted in financial gain. Therefore, the opinion I've received and I agree with is that the CPO submission to the AG does not meet any of the protected disclosure requirements. Therefore, the submission is not protected disclosure. Adil? So, Chen, now I'll deal with the various allegations, and here I've summarized them. So there are various allegations that relate to transactions that AG, when she was still DAG, she approved regarding the late AG Kimi Makwetu. This covered salary allowances and benefit for the former AG. And while the committee have had the report, I would like to repeat them for the record, Chen. So the first allegation was, in April of 2014, Ms. Maluleke, as the AG then, approved relocation costs for AG Makwetu to the value of 575,000, which in reality was a transfer and bond cost for his new house. I'll just go through the list, Chen, and then I'll go to the opinions later. And the other one, we've grouped them together, but they were shown as two separate transactions, that in 2017, Ms. Maluleke, when she was still the AG, she approved a salary increase of AG Makwetu. Similarly, the following year in 2018, she approved a salary increase of AG Magwetu, which was above what was what the Independent Remuneration Commission recommended for public office bearers. The other allegation, Chair, was that in November 2018, Ms. Maluleke, when she was still DAG, approved 860,000 advance for AG Magwetu against his deferred compensation without your approval. And you remember, Chair, that I've spoken about where we need approval from your side. Then there were other categories that relates to the recruitment, selection, and appointment of key personnel. The specific allegation here, Chair, was that in June 2021, when she was now AG, Ms. Maluleke appointed Ms. Bongi Ngoma to the role of head of audit without following a proper recruitment procedure. Ms. Ngoma did not apply for the position and she did not meet the minimum qualification for the position. The other one was with regard to Mr. Soili Sehuwa in June 2021, where the allegation is that AG appointed him to the role of chief risk officer without following proper recruitment procedure. Mr. Sehuwa did not apply for the position. That was the allegation. The other one in this cluster, Chair, was in December 2020, the AG appointed Mr. Harold Maluleke to the role of business unit leader for communication. Mr. Maluleke did not meet the minimum qualification as per the job advertisement. Then lastly, within the category of supply chain management, is that in May 2021, the AG attempted to influence the CPO to appoint her personal coach to assist with the institution's leadership alignment program. I will now deal with the opinion as it contains to the fact, Chair. Adil, let's continue. But before that, let's just deal with some of the aspects that came through the overall report before dealing with the specific allegation. Section 219, subsection 5 of the Constitution states that the national legislation must establish a framework for the salary, allowance, and benefit of the AG. And Section 7 of the Public Auditors Act, prior to the amendments I mentioned that happened in 2019, SCOEC was supposed to consult with the person recommended for the appointment of AG and make recommendation to the president for the determination of the conditions of employment of that person, including an appropriate salary, allowance, and other benefits. In the case of AG Magwetu, SCOEC only made a recommendation in respect of salary and termination bonus in line with that of the Chief Justice. SCOEC made no recommendation on allowance and benefit. The law was silent of the position when a recommendation or determination was made. The DAG as accounting officer in these circumstances had an implied duty and authority to provide for the allowances and benefit for the AG. AG Magwetu, during his tenure, he signed a document which was titled Remuneration and Conditions of Employment for AG to close this vacuum, which provided for some certainty. We're going to refer further to this document, Chair, as the conditions document. The conditions document regulated various conditions such as leave, office vehicle, access to his Cape Town accommodation, etc., things that were not dealt with in the document that was used by the president to appoint Mr. Late AG Magwetu. Where this document was silent, normal AGSA policies would apply. And the opinion goes at length to explain that while the AG is not mentioned as an employee, the fact that the AG is paid and employed their services for the benefit of the AGSA, we can understand that the AGSA policies will apply in that case. Adil? Chair, I will now deal with the specific allegations. I'll start with the one for the security cost. In April 2014, Ms. Maluleke, when she was still the AG, approved the relocation cost for AG Magwetu to the value of 575,358, which in reality was transfer and bond costs for his new house. You'll notice that in the opinion, though it went at length to explain the responsibility of the office to secure the AG, to be able for the AG to conduct his or her work without fear or favor and to be independent. And it is the opinion that says that the AG's appointment increased his security risk. The report indicates that And we all know that before AG Makwiti was appointed, he was the AG. And after being appointed, he felt that he needed to move from a standalone house into a secure complex. The opinion made it clear that while you might have called it a relocation cost, this was cost incurred to secure the AG. And as an office, we do have a responsibility to secure the AG. There was no determination on security arrangement made by the president. As such, it was within the right of the DAG to make an assessment as to what needs to be done as far as securing the AG was concerned. The DAG formally approved the deviation. She consulted with the REMCO chair and an approval was given. The annual audit did not identify any discrepancy as far as this particular transaction was concerned. Chair, the overall opinion is very clear that the move from one home to another was a security requirement, not a relocation. While this might have been referred as a relocation, the essence of the matter is that this was a security requirement to secure the then AG and was directly linked to his appointment to the office of the Auditor General. The approval of the expenses was lawful and did not indicate corrupt, unethical, and unprofessional behavior. Adil, the next one. Regarding the salary increases, Chair, I'll deal with them together because they're all similar. In 2017 and 2018, Ms. Maluleke, when she was still DAG, she approved the salary increase of AG Makwiti that were above what the Independent Remuneration Commission recommended to public office bearers. You will recall earlier on, I mentioned when the PAEU was changed, it was only effective from 2019. So the commission had no power to make recommendation in 2017 or 2018. The Independent Remuneration Commission recommendation only applies to the AG from 1st of April 2019 onwards and when it was amended. AG's total rewards chain does not provide for the AG salary increase. And the AG conditions document, which I referred to earlier, which was signed by AG to close the gap that was there between the appointment and to regularize his allowance, it did propose at that stage that we're going to make adjustment in line with the commission. So I just need to make it clear. While the commission was not applicable, we had selected as an office to be guided by their recommendation. The AG had authority to deviate from the total rewards policy, though, because it was a recommendation. The AG considered the performance of the office, the AG's fund, and it is important to note that the AG is paid from the AGSA's coffers and not from the national budget. And in making the decision, she considered the increases to staff, and this was properly documented, and the deviation from the recommendation was justified by the reasons that were given in that case. And she only had to demonstrate that she acted reasonable and rational. And Chen, I'm glad that the CPO in this case was very diligent in recommending to the then DAG, Mr. Gani Maluleke, this rationale. And the legal opinion indicated that it made sense. So the opinion concluded that DAG's deviation from policy was lawful and the approval of salary increases was reasonable and rational. The commission had no jurisdiction at the time and there was no legal duty to obtain approval from SCOWEC. The DAG's actions were not corrupt, unethical, or unprofessional. That deals with the salary increase, Jen. Adil, please. Coming to the interest-free loan, Chair, of 816, the allegation says in November 2018, Ms. Maluleke, as the AG, approved an advance of 860,000 for AG Makwiti against his deferred compensation without SCOWEC's approval. The DAG understood that deferred compensation will only become due in November 2020. When the term of the AGs come to an end. She approved the granting of the interest-free loan based on the following. And she has shared this particular rationale with the REMCO chair, who agreed with her in that basis that the amount was insignificant and did not depart from conditions of service. Secondly, the amount did not pose a risk to the AGSA as the deferred compensation offered collateral. Thirdly, the amount was recoverable. And lastly, there will be no impact on the HSA resources over the remaining 2 years. Chair, before granting this particular loan, there was a legal opinion that was that the office got regarding the implication of the of granting the tax-free loan to the then AG and also deal with the benefits thereof. The REMCO chair, as I mentioned, was properly consulted and supported the idea. And this particular payment, chair, was properly disclosed in our annual financial statement as an interest-free loan, and the deferred compensation was collateral to ensure recoverability. So the opinion here, chair, is that while it might have been called an advance, the financial statement was very clear. This was an interest-free loan, and giving a loan is within the DAG's mandate. The deferred benefit was used as collateral. So the opinion says the DAG acted lawfully and rational. No SCOWEC approval was required. The approval does not amount to corrupt, unethical, and unprofessional behavior. So, Chair, this is talk to the overall SCOWEC approval. And I'd like to pause here because of the transition that I've mentioned so far, and the ones that I'm going to continue, the people that were implicated are able to talk to those particular transactions. This one, especially because it was a request from AG Makwetu, and as we know, he's not in a position to present his side of the story. I do think that I need to pause and just give my personal perspective in this case. We all know that AG Makwetu could not finish his term in office. He passed away just a few days before his term came to an end. And we all know now something that he had kept to himself, that he had cancer. While you may not know the exact reason that he needed this advance, when I look into the circumstances and the timing, I do think that his illness that he has kept away from the office and continued executing his responsibility as Auditor General might have had to do with this particular advance. He cannot speak for himself. I can only just articulate. I do know that the committee may ask someone in his position who is fairly remunerated, why would he want an advance or as an interest-free loan? I cannot pinpoint what it is. I can only speculate that his unfortunate battle with cancer might have affected his financial resources. And I do think it's unfortunate that in the fallout between the CPO and the AG, some of these transactions are bringing people memories into disrepute. We have really served our organization, first of all, but also the Republic with distinction. And I did, let's proceed to the next one. Okay. So, Chair, while they go to the next one, which talks to them, to the interest. It helps to always have a backup of a printed document in case there's a glitch with technology. So on the interest, Chair, the allegations state that in December 2020, this was after AG Makwetu passed away, and by this time, Mr. Kanu was now AG, approved the payment of interest on AG Makwetu's deferred compensation to Mrs. Makwetu without SCOWEC's approval. That was the allegation. The investigation found that AG initially agreed to pay a simple interest to settle a dispute with Mrs. Makwetu in December 2020. However, the simple interest offer was not accepted by the family. The investigation though found that subsequent to that, the interest were paid in July 2021. And this period, Chair, is of interest to me because I was already DAG at that stage and I did not authorize this particular transaction. We still understanding as to how it got paid. And it was, however, paid to the deceased estate of late AG Makwetu. The AGSA, we are still investigating this matter to take appropriate action. Like I mentioned, this was done when I was now DAG. And my understanding is that AG had approved it to be paid in December the prior year. And she did, though, ask the office to deal with the matters to settle the any outstanding payment that we do to late AG Makwetu, and this was made as part of that overall payment.
Chair, moving on to the ones regarding the appointments. On the appointment in June 2021, the AG appointed Mrs. Bongi Ngoma to the role of head of audit without following a proper recruitment procedure. Ms. Ngoma did not apply for the position and she did not meet the minimum qualification of the position. Chair, this is also a process that I was part of. This is the process that led to me being appointed as the AG. The timing of these two, given that we're doing a restructuring, happened the same time. So the role of appointing the head of audit and the role of appointing the DAG were running concurrently. Ms. Ngoma applied for the role of DAG. She was the only internal candidate who made it to the second round, and she continued on that. The opinion confirmed that she does have a CA qualification, and in terms of the tenure that she's got as an executive, she's got over 15 years experience as per the requirement. So the legal opinion found that she met the qualification and experience that was required for this job. She also met the requirement, waiver requirement. So internally, the AG could make decisions in terms of the waiver. However, the waiver was not properly documented. This is something that should have been done by the CPO. You will notice in your report that there is engagement with the CPO regarding this matter. My own view, the EHA, Chair, is that you cannot expect someone who's running for a more senior role to concurrently apply for a junior role, because the head of audit is slightly junior compared to a DAG. And since she was still in the running, she was focusing on that particular role. AG, in her response, and you will see it in the details report, she does indicate the rationale that she applied in terms of reappointing people. I'm emphasizing this because it's going to deal with the next issue as well. I'd like to remind the committee that this happened at the time when we were restructuring the office. So the role of head of office was new. Sorry, head of audit was new, and the various positions. So it was necessary for AG to apply her mind, which is in line with succession planning, and our policies do allow that. So this was not in any way deemed to be corrupt, unethical, and unprofessional. And I'd like to emphasize that because people's reputation has been tarnished. When we came to you last year, we were bragging that as a CFO, she was CFO of the year. She was a CFO of the year in the public sector that won CFO of the year. That means across the board, not only just in a public sector. It was the first time that a public sector CFO came toe-to-toe with the private sector and won. Having worked with Ms. Ngoma over the past 14 months or so since I took over as DAG, I'm very comfortable with the part that she's playing as a member of my executive. And I'm really appreciative of her effort. And I'm sorry for the head that she had to deal with when this matter went public, questioning her competence and questioning her ability and her qualification. The facts speak for themselves that she is adequately qualified. She might not have applied for the job because she was going for a more senior job relative to the one that she ended up being deployed to. And I do thank AG Tsakani for having appointed her. Let's move to the next one, Adil. The next one is similar, Chair, so I will not spend too much time on it, but this one said in June 2021, AG appointed Solis Hoa as Chief Risk Officer without following proper recruitment procedure. It's a similar thing. Mr. Hoa had applied to be head of audit, and he did not and was not a successful candidate. Using the same rationale as I've explained before, AG felt that she needed to appoint him for succession planning on this particular role. In the case of Mr. Sohua, there was no question about his experience. He's a well-experienced person. He's a CA. He's a very reliable member of EXCO. He had the number of years. I think here the concern that was raised by the CPO was that he did not apply. Our policies allow us to deviate. The person who was supposed to document the deviation is the CPO, and that did not happen. When I look into the rationale and look into the opinion, I do agree with the opinion that Mr. Sohua met the qualification and experience requirement. He also met the recruitment waiver policy requirement for
and he's got a proven track record. His appointment was therefore not corrupt, unethical, or unprofessional. The next one, Chair, regarding the appointment was regarding the business unit leader for communication. This was an outside appointment. The other two were internal people who were already working within the AG. In December 2020, the AG appointed Mr. Harold Maloka to the role of business unit leader for communication. Mr. Maloka did not meet the minimum qualification as per the job advertisement. Chair, the report goes into a lot of details comparing the job requirement and the qualification and experience of Mr. Maloka. On the job requirement side, from an academic qualification, what was required was a bachelor's degree or a postgraduate diploma in communication or public relations or journalism or public administration. Secondly, there was a requirement to be registered with a professional body. And from an experience perspective, there was a requirement for 5 to 10 years relevant experience. As you'll have seen in the report, they say that Mr. Maloka did not have a bachelor's degree. However, he does have a VETS Business School Management Advanced Program Certificate, which is NQF Level 8, equivalent to an honors degree. Check. He is not registered with a relevant professional body. However, he's got 20 years experience. He does have vast experience in management and executive roles, where he has been a director, chief director, deputy director general in government, and also in terms of being a managing director for other private firms. Before I go to the opinion, Chen, I've taken a special interest on this matter because as the DAG, Mr. Maloka now report directly to me. I've had the experience of working with him over the past 14 months. And beside the other direct reports who sit in EXCO, he's at the business unit leader level, which is not an EXCO position. Similarly to Adil, who reports directly to me in my portfolio of DAG, he's one of the people that I'm very proud about the work that he's doing. He's an individual that if I was then DAG and I've gone through this process, I would have most likely appointed him based on the experience I've gained with him. The report will clearly indicate that he was recommended without opposition by the panel to appoint him. When I look into this, Chair, and I look into the requirement about the professional body, I suspect it could have been, most likely we took job description from our audit site. For the audit side, we do need people to be a member of a professional body, such as SAICA or ELBA, because we are auditors. In terms of the communication side, there's no clear indication as to which professional body did we require. So I need to go and look into this as the AG. My assessment is that we might have not applied enough rigor in approving the job description. In the audit side of the business, we are very clear about it because that's our bread and butter. But in the support side, there might be need for us to go back and look into that. And we're going to look into this and come back and report to the audit committee. So the opinion in this case, Chair, does say that Mr. Maloka did not meet the qualification requirement and was not registered with a professional body. His appointment did not meet the requirement waiver required. His appointment did not meet legality requirement. His appointment did not meet the legality requirement. However, there was no evidence that his appointment amounted to corrupt, unethical, and unprofessional behavior. I do need to emphasize that when I spoke to the legal counsel, they explained to me what meeting the legality requirement means. So once you set your job description, you need to ensure that you hold everyone accountable to that particular job description. If you do a waiver, you must document your reasons. In this case, Chen, the rationale that was used to shortlist Mr. Maloka has not been documented. Good practice within our office should have dictated that that gets documented and is part of the file that we've got. In this case, it was not done. It's an area that we need to improve on. As the acting chief people's officer, given that our current one is suspended, I'm fulfilling that role. I need to just make sure that we tighten these particular issues. When I take you through the future steps, I will emphasize what you're going to be doing going forward to ensure that any gaps that might have been there, especially around the job description. subscriptions are properly closed off so that we get the same rigor that we use for the support as done for the audit business. Adil?
I thought I must stop you on this one.
Yeah.
You see, while it's fresh, so that if there are questions from the member, I do have a question, which will assist me. If colleagues want to raise anything from this, as I do, on my side, is that probably, which is in line with the legal opinion, that these matters, matters of recruitment, if you issue a published call for any interested parties in a particular position, you can't deviate from it because you might have had denied others who have interest because of that particular prescribed call. And therefore, the actual deviation or waiver from there would attract some kind of a challenge one way or the other. You would know it. You have been involved in audits and all the stuff. So what the legal opinion begins to realize is that, well, fine, you have the authority to handle these matters because the law covers you. But while the law covers you, when you do so, you must keep each and every step of the way somewhat documented. Whose responsibility is that? In terms of the recruitment, and secondly, at what stage of finality you see of that process, you would want to revert back into that factual predetermination that these individuals are supposed to be somewhat like this, because the legal opinion is saying in your advert you've never stipulated that there should be an equivalent, you see, which might have been a slip even at that point. It was, if there was an indication of a stated provision that equivalent to this, then your actual judgment would have been well covered, and there would have been no point in terms of querying substantively legality on the matter. So I view this personally that it is though within your purview, you see, and looking into it could be based on hindsight. In saying probably if we would have done A, B, C, D, E, this wouldn't have landed us into this situation. Do you have that kind of an outlook getting there, and the responsibility thereof, where does it lie for such in a substantive form?
Yeah.
I don't know whether you get my point there. Orab Motefa?
Thank you very much, Chair. No, I think the question is proper. But also, this slide did catch my attention, but how I interpreted it was in line with how we normally account financially. That prescripts will be laid down, but where it is not humanly possible or where there are issues of justification, deviations are allowed. But as and when you deviate, there must be documented somewhere to be able to indicate why you moved away from what the prescripts would have dictated. So how I read the presentation and listening to the DAG speaking about issues that they're going to bring forth in order to tighten this process is that this allegation has actually brought up new learnings that you will be able to enhance your inner workings. Now, when you look at the opinion, the opinion speaks to the allegation that is made. And the allegation is very direct, Chair, which is alleging certain unbecoming behavior on the part of the AG. But based on the context that you have put and what I just said now, is that according to the opinion, they do not believe that what happened really satisfied the allegation. So the view is that here we can move forward, and I would be more interested to understand the new measures that you are going to put in place. And that will also assist for the sake of posterity, that whoever then comes after you would be able to know that, yeah, there was a gap, but this gap has been closed, and it's been closed in this particular way. So as much as there was a allegation, as far as the opinion is concerned, it says that the allegation does not pass the test. And where I'm sitting, Chair, I'm quite satisfied. I'll just wait for the DAG to respond to the direct questions that you have posed. But when I read this, I was quite comfortable that no. Indeed, as far as deviations are concerned, they are allowed. The only thing that you have raised correctly is that maybe you need to have captured that somewhere so that you are then able to know how did this happen and how do we move forward. I'll pause there, Chair. Thank you. Thank you very much.
No, for now I'm still okay, Chairperson. I'm just waiting for them to finalize. Then I will actually wrap it up in the end. Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Chair, and thanks, Honourable Members, for the question. And you are correct, Chair. So we do note the finding and the procedural flaw that happened. And you asked me the question as to whose responsibility was it to document the deviation. That particular role sits squarely within the Chief People's Officer's domain as the custodian of the recruitment process. And unfortunately, in this case, the deviation was not done. And as Honourable Member indicate, when they look into the legality, they look into the documents that are available and our policies. And because the reason for the deviation was not documented, that's why the legality part we did not pass. So we are going to ensure that in future, if there's things like this, we do properly document. We do have waivers within the office, and the way we go about it, we adequately document our waivers and deviation. Chair, in terms of the step that we're going to be doing around this, that we'll attend to the HR witnesses that led to this flaw, which one of them is just the discipline of documenting this thing. Normally, it will not be done by the DAG. The person who's the process owner will normally document that. Then it's going to come to the DAG to be signed off. And the panel should have, in this case, have signed off on that particular one. So they regularize that particular matter. My simple understanding of this is that we came short on the documentation side of things. The panel was clear. As indicated, Mr. Maloka scored the highest point in the interview. So the interview process did confirm that he is the right person. As we mentioned that it could be possible that in putting the job description out there, we add in not indicating that this is the key qualification, but something also equivalent would be acceptable. And in the case where we accept an equivalent qualification, we should have adequately documented that. So I bring it down to documentation, Chair. As auditors, we appreciate that documentation is important. We ask our auditors to do the same thing. We should have done the same thing ourselves to ensure that when someone comes and review us, they fully understand the rationale that was applied around this particular matter. As the opinion says, this was not corrupt, unethical, or unprofessional behavior, but we have found one thing on the documentation part of things.
Even from when I read the details of the lawyers, on this matter, what was interesting is that the documents on the actual scoring and determination of the performance of those who were interviewed, such document does exist, and the actual determination arrived at in terms of who should be appointed. There is an indication that indeed Mr. Maloko scored highly on such a kind of interview. And what is somewhat not there is on the waiver. You see on the deviation, which is a bit emphatic to the fact that if the upkeep of documents should be realized, you have people who have been assigned that responsibility. And through that responsibility lying on them, and our expectation, my expectation is that such individuals must be held liable for such instances of failure or lapse, because the realization of such having to fulfill the litmus paper test on their overall legality is based on such existence. You see, you could imagine that someone is not there to explain. You're no longer there, you see, and someone is blamed on this aspect. And there's no document anywhere which justifies such appointment. And the individual concerned who has been appointed is on an embarrassing state. And as such, it becomes an emotive aspect in terms of the individual occupying such a position. And that's why I'm asking the question, who was responsible? Because now it fills into the gap of emotions, individual affected, those who interviewed in the fit for purpose you see, analysis in terms of decisions. Then this becomes prime in one way or the other. I agree with Honorable Matafa that the lawyers had to deal with a test as to whether, in terms of the allegation, it fits within the unethical conduct, within the corrupt practice, one professional, you see, occurrence. The lawyers see otherwise, but they hop on the filter which leads to legality. And that for the Office of the Auditor General to be seen into that angle. We don't have to take it a bit lighter. It was the individual concerned who's supposed to take such a decision. It's a matter which becomes primary in as far as this a kind of a situation is concerned. It's confirmed that your judgment is based on certain things, and those things ought to have been documented. No documentation around around such. Therefore, in your remedy, you need to have some kind of a focus in that area. You see, but you can proceed.
Thank you, Chen. We'll definitely do that. We will ensure that where actions were not being taken, the executives that were supposed to do a job that they did not do, we take appropriate action. Thank you, Chair, for the engagement. I think it was important because it was one of those issues that when I look at this report, it was one of the areas of concern that we had to deal with. I think we skipped something here. The interest, I think, just go back. I think the time that we got, have we dealt with the interest?
Yes, we have.
With the interest? Oh, yeah, okay, okay, great. All right, let's move to the supply chain.
Maybe because you're dealing with money.
Yeah. So on the supply chain matter, the allegation was that the AG attempted to influence the appointment of a personal coach in 2021. And it says in May 2021, the AG attempted to influence the CPO to appoint a personal coach to assist with the institution's leadership alignment program. And The report indicates that the AG found her coach very knowledgeable and experienced, who could possibly assist to enhance ex-co cohesion. AG shared her thinking with the CPO and also with myself when I joined in July, but advised us to follow due process. Chair, I can confirm that I took over this process. It was one of the first few initiatives that I took when I became the AG. And it was upon the advice of AG that given the restructuring, it's important to get the ex-co team to re-establish the cohesion. And I oversaw this process. We did not appoint a personal coach. A different company was appointed that assisted us with this particular matter. The opinion does indicate that there was no evidence that supported the CPO's version. The AG, in sharing her thinking, did not commit an act of corruption or unethical nor unprofessional behavior. And since I'm the one who oversaw this process, I can also confirm from my own experience that when she shared with me, it was her own experience and the concerns that given the restructuring, there is a need for an intervention to get the ex-co team to work as a unit. So this was unfounded. So Chair, I'll move to the corrective action at the high level. And we'll spend a lot of time with the audit committee as our oversight body. We spent a lot of hours over weekends. And while these are at the high level, we are going to engage with the committee to ensure that the breakdown of those are monitored. And through our reporting mechanism back to you via the audit committee, that will be done. So our overall comment here is that as an office, we take the outcome of the legal opinion seriously, and we are in the process of identifying areas where governance and controls should be tightened. As part of this, there are other areas which are not specific to the allegations, but there is a need for us to look into that, and there will be a report that we're going to issue to audit committee and also ultimately to yourself that will deal with that. This particular plan, Chair, will be time-bound with specific action to address any governance or internal control weaknesses. The plan of action will be shared with the audit committee, as I've mentioned, for comment and tracking. And this will, as the audit committee is an oversight body that keeps us honest with any of our action plans, it's going to be something that we're going to report as and when we meet with them. And I'm certain that the chair will touch on this, the chair of audit committee, when he gives his report. Regarding the matter for the interest, Chair, we are going to look into, we're going to investigate and understand how it was paid and appropriate action will be taken. As the opinion indicated, there was a calculation error on the interest, so that will be dealt with. We spent quite a bit of time, Chair, discussing the issue around the appointment of the head of communication. Our understanding, as mentioned, there was a procedural flaw in the process of appointing the head of communication, especially on the on doing the appropriate documentation. We will attend to the HR management witness that led to this flaw, among these being the crafting of properly thought of and approved job descriptions in the support side of our business. In the audit side, we feel comfortable that we've got the right job description. In this instance, Chair, we are comfortable that we ended up with the right candidate for the job who was appointed following the normal interview process. However, the documentation of our job description did let us down. I will pause now, Chair, and just take any questions overall.
Thank you very much, DAG, AG, for the actual presentation. You know, I was talking to Mr. Mkhaji here. Mr. Mkhaji has been here for quite some time as a content advisor in the committee. The birth of the Public Audit Act came about informing, advising the committees around such aspects. So I was trying to check with him on this matter that relates to salary benefits and all the stuff, whether these areas that ought to be closed were never foreseen by the committee. He says something which is not far from what, in terms of practice, is now being observed. I'm going to give him time at some stage to indicate what has been there. Probably can do it even before the members could probably reflect on it. Just in a minute, sure. Mr. Mpatshi.
Thanks, Chair, and good morning to members and the AGNT and the team. No, what I was trying to explain to the Chair is that I remember it was the issue during the appointment of the late Mr. Makwetu as his AG. And there was, I think it was Section 7, as we, Section 77 of the PAET, before it was amended, that the salary should be in line with the high echelons of judiciary. So we did extensive research. What is this benefit and allowance of the high echelon of judiciary? We phoned Chief Justice office, and we want to get, because there are rumors that Chief Justice has got a house here in the Cape Town, Bishop's Court, Cape Town, one of the expensive, and then these guys in the Justice said they don't know about those things. We even went to try to align the salary of the AG with those high echelon. We went to a sitting actuarial company. What is that, Sam? Alexander Fobin Joburg. There was a subcommittee on the committee. The subcommittee was made up of three members and us. And then we went to Alexander Fobin, tried to assist, so that we requested them to assist us to equate this salary, I mean, this allowance and benefit. But in a nutshell, despite those efforts, we couldn't establish what could be. And then what we did as a committee now, we said, no, the salary, let us just confirm the salary and leave, as Ruta said. The benefits and allowance should be according to the institutional policy. That's what the committee said. But it's what I was saying to Chekuti. I'm not sure now what was the communication thereafter between the speaker and the president, because us as a committee, that's what we resolved. And then that the other allowance and benefit will be in line with the institutional policy. But when the writing was made, the communication was made between the speaker and the president, was, I'm not sure, because the process, I still remember Mr. Makwetu called us, even called me about that process, because it was delaying. After that, we didn't have any abreast of what the developments with regard to that. So I don't know what happened, but as a committee, this is what we resolved. I still recall very well.
So there's some confirmation to what needs to be done going forward, and probably to affirm the position. The intention has been there to deal with these things, but then it might have slipped through the cracks of communication one way or another. It is within us, within our power, to somewhat find a way of finalization together with yourselves on that matter. You see, colleagues, do you have any question? We're going to allow the chair of the audit after that to give us the view of the committee on these matters. Or do you want to ask questions or to express ourselves after the chairperson? Okay. Chairperson, welcome. Oh, the mic on, sir. That's right. That's it. Assist him to adjust it.
I beg your pardon, sir. I haven't done this for a few years because of not being here in person. I'll repeat just for the record that first of all, good morning to you, Honourable Chairperson Somya, and to the Honourable Members of the Standing Committee on the Audit General, or SCOAC as it's typically called. My name is John Beesman Simmons. I'm the Chairperson of the Audit Committee of Audit General South Africa. Our committee comprises four members. We have a Deputy Chair, Ms. Gretel Mattel. She is currently enrolled for time-consuming postgraduate studies at Harvard Business School, based in the United States, and has tendered her apologies at the timing of this morning's presentation did not fit with her work timetable, and particularly with her studies. Another member of the audit committee, Ms. Carol Ross Kruger, sadly, she cannot be with us as she's traveling to a funeral in the Eastern Cape as we speak, or as I speak. The last member of the audit committee is Mr. Cedric Mampuru. He is on the call virtually. He planned to attend in person, but air tickets are, as many of you know, a scarce and expensive commodity. So he's wisely elected to join virtually. For him to have got on a flight, he would have had to come down on Wednesday, and he couldn't get a flight back to Johannesburg this afternoon or evening, so he would have come on Wednesday and got back on Saturday. And it was agreed that that was not in anyone's best interest, really. I was going to ask him to unmute himself and switch on his camera, but I don't think that's possible while we have the presentation on. But thank you, Cedric, for joining us in this meeting. Chair, I want to assure you and your committee members that their physical absence today does not in any way diminish their commitment to their oversight role in respect of the Auditor General of South Africa. They are highly committed to their tasks. The DAG mentioned that we've had a number of meetings, including over weekends. They're pulling their weight, if I can put it that way, without any doubt. Before I get into the detail of the report, I want to make a few general remarks. Like SCOAC, the Audit Committee is an oversight body, and we do not get involved in any operational responsibilities, nor should we. Our report to you is based on information supplied to us, so it's in all respects, it's secondhand information. And for that purpose, we use the word allegedly, because we have at this stage no proof of anything. Now, I'm a chartered accountant by training, but I know from common knowledge, really, that attorneys use allegedly the whole time for very much the same reason. In no way are we doubting the veracity of any assertions made to us, but equally, a tenet of the auditing profession is one of professional skepticism. So you don't just accept things; you need to interrogate them. And certainly, we've done that, and not blindly reached any of the matters I'm going to talk about. Turning to the presentation and the introduction, a lot of what I'm going to say is a repeat of what has been covered, and I will make that point and try and keep those parts of my presentation as short as possible. The report emerges from information that the Deputy Auditor General shared with the Audit Committee. We had a scheduled meeting on the 26th of July to finalize, amongst other things, the annual financial statements for the year ended 31 March. And he asked the committee members to remain after the meeting in camera with nobody else, just the DAG and the audit committee members. He briefed us about the allegations and gave us an assurance that he was proceeding, he was moving forward with us. With it, and would keep us informed as the matter unfolded. I'm not going to repeat the bit about the history of what happened, because that has been covered earlier. The Auditor General, as we all know, handed the matter over to the DAG for further consideration. I think we use the word she self-reported it because the CPO had not followed due process. You mentioned, Chair, your the openness and frankness that has taken place, and we certainly echo your comments in that regard. AGSA prides itself on leading by example. They are charged with auditing all the government institutions, and if they imagine if the Auditor General had a qualified audit report, they'd be the laughing stock of the nation. And here's another example of them wanting to lead by example. The purpose of the report, stated very succinctly, is to formally brief you and your committee, Honourable Chairman. It very much looking at whether it's corrupt, unethical, or unprofessional. We relied almost exclusively on the legal opinion obtained, and we did actually meet with the lawyer himself, the advocate. I think that is covered a little bit later on, but just we didn't just read his report and accept it. We spent an hour and a half, I would say it was, I think, on a Saturday morning. And we were very grateful that he cooperated with us. He was, in fact, on vacation in Europe. So a lot of people put a lot of effort and time into this process. The application policy requirements is dealt with in this next slide. The point was made that the CPO did not follow due process. And of all people not to do that, he's the one who should know it the best. He heads up the people portfolio. And it's been mentioned that he also contravened the procedural requirements of the Protection of Disclosures Act. So I'm not going to go further into that. The steps taken by the AG and DAG on this next slide. The Auditor General immediately notified the DAG of the matter. I understand that was a telephone call and it was on the same day. She didn't sleep on it. She immediately phoned him and told him what had happened. And then they met 2 days later to discuss it further, and a decision was taken to appoint a firm of attorneys, and you've heard that was Bowman's, and that Bowman's in turn instructed an advocate to pursue it further. My understanding was that you and your committee had the on-site visit in Pretoria and that you were given a formal briefing at that point. The DAG has kept the audit committee informed on the nature of the independent legal assessment. We have, as you indicated, met on a number of occasions and have been well briefed and very much open and transparent and frank discussions that have taken place. We have not got involved, certainly not at this stage, and may not get involved at all in terms of the investigation into the conduct of the CPO. That is very much an industrial relations issue, and very few chartered accountants are that well versed on those matters, and it really is a legal issue. So we're unlikely to get involved in that. However, we will be very involved in addressing the control weaknesses that advocate has highlighted, and we do meet, the committee meets on at least three occasions per annum, and what we do at those meetings, we obviously have an annual work plan, and we have an issue of matters arising, and anything that is not cleared, it gets automatically carried forward to the next meeting. So until this matter is finally put to bed, the audit committee will remain involved in it and will pay particular attention to it because of the reputational damage to the Auditor General herself and to AGSA overall. I've mentioned that we engaged with Advocate Krill, and the Auditor General very kindly availed us of some time where she took us through the process that she told you earlier. We were very grateful to her and for her open and frankness, which you've all heard about. And in fact, Jay, as I said, you commented on it earlier. The two areas of the nine allegations where there were perhaps weaknesses in the way they were dealt with, the payment of interest and the appointment of the head of communications, I think have been dealt with in sufficient detail, so I won't go into that any further. There is an issue, Chair, that is a slight deviation from our actual brief, but we have pointed out in the second last bullet proof that we have a position right now where the DAG is being forced to make decisions that relate to the AG, and the DAG reports to the AG, but yet has the power to make decisions. We believe that it really needs to be addressed. I think you hinted at it yourself, but something needs to be, some process we believe needs to be brought into being that addresses that issue. The AGSA will keep this in mind, will follow up and no doubt refer back to you, because it might actually require an amendment to the BAA or some very definite authority to go down a different route. And to the extent that AGSA wishes for our input, we're very, very happy to do that. Chair, I thank you for the time given to us as the audit committee, and I am obviously available for any questions.
Thank you, colleagues. So we've gone through the full cycle, and the presence of the audit committee assists around these matters, and the affirmation of the internal control environment is so critical in this instance, and therefore they remain an institutional mechanism to certify such matters in terms of being attended to. And they're coming back to us. Because we're dealing with the legal entity and which is following the foundations of our own constitution from the existence to its own operations and the cause of having systems which are going to put it into a high standard in terms of filtering our democratic practice. And therefore, ourselves, we can't slip away from such legal parameters. So that's why in appreciation, that such openness, which is carried within the internal operational environment, when it comes to us, it doesn't come to us because there's been a force to it to come to us. That's why we so appreciate that example. So the exemplary nature of attending to these aspects guarantees that this institution indeed establishes itself within the clear parameters of the highest law of the country, our constitution, and then assisted by the Public Audit Act. So in that angle, we need to somewhat have our own appreciation voiced out. Colleagues, here you are. You have heard the presentation. It's so detailed. As I said, it followed the initial briefing that we received, and it seeks to say to us, guaranteed, the matters are attended to. Otherwise, if that was not the case, that would require our attention fully. You see, that would have amounting to failure of observing your internal control environment. You might have questions, comments, colleagues. You are free to do so.
Can I please start, Chair?
Yes, allowed, Honorable Ranyane.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, first and foremost, we'll just like to thank the report that we have received from the Office of the AG. We're very happy with it. We're very happy that when the AG saw the devil in her doorstep, she reacted in a proper and professional manner of making sure that she informs the deputy AG, and then she removes herself from the situation and allows the process to run in the way that it has ran. But with that said, Chair, you know what pains me the most is that as South Africa, we're not looking at what we should be looking at. Today, we're sitting here questioning the credibility of the AG instead of actually looking properly. Why are we here in the first place? We are here in the first place because there is that devil, that one, that CPO, who actually tried to get monies out of the AG, unlawfully so. The journalists, everybody in this country, nobody is actually looking at the CPO. Instead, we are here doing a nine step of these are what the CPO have accused the Auditor General with. She is here trying to clean herself instead of us dealing with exactly why are we here. We are here because there is a man at the office of the AG who wanted to solicitate unlawful payments. No one is speaking about that, Chair. No one. No one is speaking about this is the reason why we are here. We are speaking about everything else except that man. No one is speaking about the rot that we find in our institutions when we are trying so hard to have the independent institutions to be independent. No one is speaking about the problem which we are facing today. Instead, the AG is now put on trial. The AG is now the one who is being looked at. The AG is, even when they call, they don't ask about this. They ask, what is your opinion about what the AG has been accused? Accused by who? Accused by a man who was trying to say, pay me or else. Why are we not looking at that particular problem, Chair? Which is really my serious, serious problem. I've had the presentation. I don't have any issues with it. We have always supported the office of the AG from the beginning, which never happens. You know, we don't really support. But we have supported it from the beginning, and we've always made sure that we give the necessary support. People's names are being dragged to the mud. The late AG's name is being dragged to the mud. And I do not understand why, because the late AG, Mr. Makwetu, made sure that he served this country with honesty and credibility until the day he passed away. But today, we are here questioning him, questioning his contribution to this country. Why? Because there's that devil that no one wants to speak about. No one wants to speak about him. To say, we are here today because this man tried to get what was not due to him. Which then brings me to the question of the safety of the office of the AG. Even during the times when Mr. Makwethu was still alive, the issue of the safety of the AG and the people who work for the AG has always been an issue that auditors in South Africa get threatened. We had cases that were brought to us as this committee to say we had this incident that have happened and this incident that have happened. And even a person who was, I think if I'm not mistaken, was shot. And to this day, we called SAPS here. We asked SAPS, what are you doing to make sure that you defend the office of the AG? But nothing has happened. But what is happening now? We're here on a Friday, mind you, being dragged to Parliament, not to deal with the issue of that devil, but to come and question the credibility of a woman who have made sure that she's serving South Africa for how long now? She's being questioned because of that man. It is not fair, Chair. It is not fair, Chairperson. And I really think that I really wish in everything that we got today, I was really wanting to know what was going to happen to that devil. The committee, AG, when we're with you in Pretoria, we've said we want a case to be opened. A case must be opened. A case of intimidation and a case of solicitation must be opened. And no one is still speaking about it. And it's really, honestly, Chair, making me extremely angry. Because as a nation, we're doing typically what we always do. There is an issue of an abuser here, an issue of a thief, an issue of a man who just should never even work anywhere in South Africa ever again. But no one is looking at that issue. Instead, we're putting a person who was attacked.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Honorable Matafa.
Thank you very much, Chair. Now, I think maybe let me start where you started when you introduced the topic, that it is very rare that a public entity does what the chair of the audit committee mentioned as self-reporting. Because in most cases, matters of such nature are dragged out of those institutions. And for me, I would want to commend the AG for actually doing what she did and not leaving matters slide and taking them lightly. Firstly, I think maybe I want to agree with Honorable Sonyana, not necessarily delving into the merits of the case, because I see there are processes that are unfolding. And as the committee, like we indicated when we were in Pretoria, we will give the necessary support to ensure that you do complete your processes, and then you can then come back to be able to share with us your findings. So my view, Chair, is that here we are dealing with a matter of extortion that went wrong. Went wrong in the sense that the person who was supposed to be intimidated did not bite, did not take the bite. So I think for that as well, we would want to commend the AG for standing her ground, but most importantly, to put herself to scrutiny, because immediately she removes herself from the platform and says, DAG, here's a matter, it involves me, please investigate, and does not give limitations or limits and parameters as to how far they can go. It clearly means indeed that they do take the issues of accountability very seriously. So from where we're sitting, DAG, through you, Chair, you have two processes. One that deals with the conduct of the CPO. It is unfolding, as you indicated, that probably by next week there will be a sitting. The second part is the one that you are reporting on, where allegations are made against the AG herself. And you support that with the opinions that are crafted by a law firm, and not just an ordinary law firm, Chair. We have had many interactions with Bowman's. It's a reputable law firm. It has extensive experience in the public space. So from where we are sitting also, it shows that the office of the AG and the AG herself is not scared of scrutiny. So that process is unfolding. Legal opinions have been given. You have identified learnings. I would request, Chair, that with the identified learnings and corrective measures, maybe a report be drafted to this committee that those particular areas that you're going to improve in terms of your internal operations are shared with us, so that in future we are also able to monitor compliance going forward, because it will be an anomaly, and I don't think that it will happen given the presentation that a situation where you have identified a learning reoccurs when there are measures that you yourself have identified as corrective measures. So it's just a request, Chair, that maybe we receive that report. The proactive nature is welcome. The involvement of other stakeholders, because not only did the AG involve the DAG, but he also involved the Remuneration Committee and the Audit Committee. That is commendable. Maybe, Chair, in closing, I would say the following. There are areas that we think do not fall within our mandate as COWEC from where I'm sitting. And we'll want to allow you the space to conclude on those matters. But where there are issues of lawmaking, requirements on law amendments, the Chair touched on the issue of remuneration of the AG, and any other matter that will require attention of the COWEC, I would also suggest, Chair, that those particular issues, Mr. Mklaji and the DAG assist us in order to compress them into a readable paper that we are able then to take forward to our legal unit in Parliament to be able to guide us how best to respond to these issues. Because from where I'm sitting, I suspect that there will be areas that as COWEC, we might need to make a pronouncement, but it will serve us best if we are able to receive the necessary legal advice on how best to respond to these issues. And I think the chairperson will be capable of issuing a statement in that regard in terms of how then do we move forward. I also found slide 9 very telling, where you are actually indicating the areas where you have to consult, where you have to seek permission, where you have to seek concurrence, where you have to advise COWEC. So I think that also puts the whole picture into a very nice and consumable size. So Chair, I will pause there to say that thank you for the presentation and the feedback. It really assists, and at least we'll be able to respond to issues as they are raised, whether in the public domain or in Parliament. There were issues of media reports, and I agree with Honorable Sonyan that we have a culture of reporting at face value, but we do not necessarily go deeper into what led to where we are. Maybe it's obviously the issue of bad news selling. I'm not sure, but I think that the report today really clarifies many issues that we have noted. Chair, let me pause there, and then I'll thank you for the opportunity to participate in this meeting. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. I was advised earlier on that Honorable Singh would be somewhere, because he's somewhere in Gauteng. I don't know whether they had problems in terms of connection. Nevertheless, I think colleagues have expressed themselves on these matters, something which from the onset was struck by the fact that the actual encouragement from the word go to report and report and report was very, very encouraging to us. It's somewhat a bit rare that would find such a kind of a situation. So I've listened to the AG when she spoke passionately about her attitude in dealing with her work and keeping the standards, keeping the values of the Constitution, driven by purpose, and upholding the critical principles of ethical conduct. That is very, very critical for us as a guarantee of an office which ought to live, to be trusted, to carry its own work within the confines of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa. So we really appreciate that fact. So I think we really need to pronounce clearly on that matter. Secondly, is that hearing Honorable Hlonyan, who herself has expressed in a very emotive way how she felt about what has happened. You see, I'm sure it's driven by the fact that you had a woman in her office trusting an employee for a meeting in an objective way, which ended up being a confrontational exercise, and itself bordering on safety of the Auditor General into having to travel through such a kind of a so-called meeting. Less in our own assessment, we have a guarantee into a process which has been highlighted, which is taking place on the 21st going forward in terms of the disciplinary process. Otherwise, we would have had to express ourselves in an objective way on those matters. So lest we muddy waters, we leave that exercise in trust into your internal control environment. The third, the fourth angle is the angle that relates to how your institutions have collectively, because in terms of the Public Audit Act, there are clearly defined areas which got into various hands in dealing with matters. And in appreciation, the chair of the audit committee, how you yourselves and your team have handled the matters and provide this kind of a report to us. In trust, we give it over to yourselves to finalize every process. I think the expression which has been made that do so and detail those areas based on the recommendations by the independent firm, which need to be attended to. And our team, in terms of the content advisor, could be interacted with on some of those matters with reference to ourselves so that we can see which are those areas. You are coming back when you're going to table your annual report. Maybe at that time, you might be at least first on which are those areas and bring forth some of those areas. It has been our attitude that these matters must be brought forward for them to be finalized. It's no justice or justification to have matters hanging for long, more so when they refer to an institution which ought to uphold the highest value of the land in terms of the performance of its own task. Your responsibility is onerous, and therefore it ought at all times be well covered in the bowl of ethics and uphold the highest standard so that no one in the land would want to have a referral when they fail to do what is right, and that even yourselves, you are as we are. So we are really grateful that you have come up to this position, and we really appreciate your attendance, because I've looked into the Public Audit Act. Each and every step there, even the report of the lawyers, they attest to some observation, and the slip towards certain angles is not necessarily based in doing bad, is based on doing good. So go back, look into those areas, advise us appropriately. We will as well look into such instances and have a finality on those. To close the loop, we say your conduct has made us to have and project full trust on the body of the Office of the Auditor General based on how this matter has been handled. So our full trust still remain going forward in the fulfillment of the key objectives outlined in the Public Audit Act of ensuring that you operate independently, and we've shown it in this environment, and that we assure your secure environment in doing your work without fear, without favor, and you are covered through your own conduct. So we dearly want to express how we so appreciate the way you have handled this matter. It's a very difficult one, because it was a bit personal. I've read the statements which have come up with to the accusations. The last paragraph on that actual piece of paper becomes so personal, such that the AG herself, let alone the office, would have been made to shiver one way or the other. But I leave all those kinds of things into your own processes to deal with them. If I were to allow to round the meeting in that way, I would give you a minute, AG, a minute each, a minute each, so that I can close the meeting. I would therefore want to start with the chairperson of the audit committee. Your record.
Beg your pardon. Thank you very much. I really would reiterate your comments, saying that as the audit committee, we really salute the AG and the DAG for their self-reporting and their follow-up. As you say, it's not that common. Things get swept under the carpet, and all sorts of excuses are made when it does come out. So it's very reassuring to us as the audit committee. And we also thank you and your committee for allowing us to give feedback to you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, DG.
Thank you, Chair. Just to thank the committee for the support and the audit committee for their support. They've been fairly busy working over weekends. We take the comments regarding taking things forward with the reports that needs to be tabled. We are going to conclude the other matters that are currently still happening within the office. And with the remaining of my minute, I'd like to give it back to AG to just give us a closing remarks, Chair.
Okay. AG.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, and thank you for the opportunity to share this story with you. It's been a difficult saga to contend with, but I suppose one rests on a few things that make up the office, the principles for which we stand, the things I've learned from AGs that have come and gone, the formidable Team AGSA that I'm proud to work with, the strength of our governance systems, notably the audit committee, the work that the DAG and his executive do, and of course the support and guidance from our oversight mechanism, that you've been able to avail yourselves to have this frank dialogue, to even have this extraordinary meeting in relation to a matter that's completely unprecedented, speaks tremendous volumes about your commitment to fulfill your own constitutional requirements in terms of supporting and protecting the office. As for me and the team I lead, we continue to do the work we're charged with. In the midst of the storm, that's what holds us together, a recognition of what we stand for and what we're charged with doing for the benefit of our democracy and for the people that we're here to serve. So thank you very much for this opportunity and thank you for your support.
Thank you. On behalf of the committee, I would take time to meet with the Makwetu family, specifically Mrs. Makwetu, because to find literally a dead man's name flying through in our language, we would say Nanyongo Nikakabuki, we find these kinds of things. It's really hurting. So we'll give ourselves time to meet with her in solidarity with the family and further comfort them that the matters are in good hands so that we solidify the fact of the matter that whatever he did for the country in service, whatever he did for the institutions in terms of accountability, is still well appreciated. So thank you very much, the meeting adjourns. Thank you.
Chairperson, it's Peter Paul online.